Pharmaceutical company Pfizer announced this weekend that its COVID-19 vaccine is at least 90% effective in preventing the virus. This is based on an outside review of early data as part of its clinical trials. The announcement has been seen as a bright spot in the fight against COVID-19, which has killed more than 1.2 million people worldwide, and with big jumps in cases in Wisconsin and around the country. But the vaccine is still in its early days, and it could be a while before it's widely available. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to the news? What questions do you have about vaccines, how they work, what it takes to get them from this stage to people? Will you get the COVID-19 vaccine once it's available? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Dr. William Hartman is an assistant professor of anesthesiology at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also principal investigator for the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial and has been developing other COVID-19 treatments. Dr. Hartman, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what, first of all, is your reaction to this announcement from Pfizer, which looks to me as a layperson like pretty good news?
I think it's very good news. As a person who has spent a lot of time researching these different vaccines and working with a vaccine trial at University of Wisconsin, I see this as a giant step forward. Lots of people have been skeptical of the timeline because the science has moved so quickly here. But I think people should be excited and should be thrilled that, you know, this was reviewed by an independent board who found the data convincingly 90% effective for this vaccine.
And let's look at that phrase, 90% effective. What exactly does that mean?
So what they do in these vaccine trials is a certain percentage of individuals will be treated with the vaccine and the other group will be treated with a sham or a placebo. At a certain point, they unblind the study. And in this case, there had to be a certain number of COVID infections in the entire study group. And then they just compare, did these infections happen in the vaccinated group or did they happen in the placebo group? And here they found that there was a 90% reduction in the number of cases in the vaccine group compared to the placebo group.
And when we say reduction in cases, does that mean people had no infection at all, or they might have had an infection but no symptoms? Do we know if this is preventing a person from, you know, catching the virus and having it spread within them, or is it preventing symptoms, maybe a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. That part of the equation wasn't described. And so one of the criteria that they look at is if you do get infected, do you have one symptom or are you asymptomatic? And compare that as well to the placebo group. Therefore, it's highly possible that this 90% effectiveness either means it prevented the virus from infecting a person, or if they did get infected, the symptoms were way milder than they otherwise would have expected.
When we're doing testing on something like this, who are the kinds of people being tested? And does it include the people who might be most vulnerable to a disease like COVID-19, older people, overweight people with diabetes and heart conditions, it looks like? Did they end up getting included in the mix of subjects here?
The answer to that is yes. I can speak to the AstraZeneca protocol because that's the one that I'm most familiar with, since that's the vaccine that we're trialing at University of Wisconsin. And in that protocol, 25% of the population is to be 65 years old and older. The patients or the subjects that we screen, they can be on any medicine as long as they're stable on that medicine. So there's all sorts of comorbid conditions that come into play here. And that was specifically requested by the companies and by Operation Warp Speed so that we know that when this vaccine becomes available, it's safe in everybody and effective in everybody, no matter what comorbidities they have or what medicines they're taking.
Talking to Dr. William Hartman from UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's working on one vaccine research project, the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial. News that the company Pfizer has had a very promising development in their own testing process. You can join in, by the way, with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about how vaccine research like this happens and what goes into the development until it's actually available to top priority people and to everybody in the future? 800-642-1234. I want to share a tweet from the CEO of Pfizer. I'm quoting now, "Our COVID-19 vaccine, if approved, will be an important part of global, national, and state prevention plans, but not the only one. Everyone should continue to follow the guidance of the scientific community and local health authorities, and please remember to wear your masks." That's coming from Pfizer's CEO there. Dr. Hartman, I think the goal there is to say, yes, this is good news. Don't give up on those public health measures yet, though.
Right. So the vaccine is one more tool in the toolbox to fight this virus. And so the other measures of washing your hands, being outside more than inside, wearing a mask, socially distancing, those are all the other tools in the toolbox. And together, these things, when used in synchrony, are what's going to propel us forward. Using any one of them just by themselves is helpful, but using them in synchrony is really what we need to attack this virus.
Now, Pfizer says it can produce something like 15 to 20 million doses of the vaccine potentially by the end of the year, pending FDA approval. And there's a little more to go on that. That's obviously not everybody. What does it take to get from the stage we're in now to mass production in the millions and maybe hundreds of millions?
So the first thing, excuse me, is that you have to be able to produce the vaccine itself. And so these mRNA vaccines, they're grown in more of a laboratory type environment. They should be able to ramp up the production of these relatively quickly. The issue with the Pfizer vaccine is that it requires extremely cold temperatures for both transport and storage. And so while the vaccine itself might be available and ready to use, there will be many countries that won't be able to utilize this particular one because of that cold storage requirement.
You mentioned this is an mRNA vaccine, which, if I understand correctly, is kind of a new wrinkle in vaccines. What is that? What makes it different?
So the mRNA vaccines are kind of the newest generation of vaccines. And so the mRNA is the message of the genetic material, if you will. And the goal is to get that mRNA into cells, in this case, in the deltoid there. So it's the mRNA is packaged into this lipid droplet. Essentially, these lipid droplets can get into the cells where the cells will, the cell's machinery that typically helps reproduce the genetic code within a cell, they're able to recognize this mRNA and build this spike protein, the spike protein that's on the virus itself. And that spike protein then gets exported from the cells into the bloodstream, where it would be recognized by the cells that make antibodies. And they make antibodies then to this spike protein. And so it's an easy design when you have the genetic code available. And the Chinese made the genetic code for the coronavirus available very, very early on in the process. So the design of the of the vaccine actually is quite simple. And it differs from other vaccines, such as the AstraZeneca one that I work with, which is a adenovirus vaccine. And so they take that the genetic material from the virus itself for that spike protein and put it into a different vector, a different virus vector that amplifies that spike protein and it makes that spike protein and then amplifies it so that it can generate antibodies to be made as well. And so it's just there are different ways of getting to the same result. And they use different technologies, but again, the purpose is the same, to generate that spike protein so that the antibodies can be made to it.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Madison. Michael, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious. One of the reports that I heard was that these results were based on 7 days after after 7 days, these results. And I'm wondering if that is typical, and if not, if that causes any concern for your specialist.
The time scale of testing of the success of this vaccine. What do we know about that, Dr. Hartman?
There's a couple of ways to interpret it. My reading on the data that they interpreted was actually that it was based on 28 days. I hadn't seen the 7 day report, but I saw that it was based on 28 days, so a month after the last person had been injected with the vaccine. And so for the first run of efficacy data, this seems like a reasonable approach. Definitely when they follow these people, and these trials are all 2 years in length, so these participants are going to be followed for a long time. So we'll see over time how effective the vaccine remains compared to placebo. And it's also important to be able to follow the safety data. Now, the FDA has made it a requirement of these vaccines to have at least 2 months of safety data following the last injection of the vaccine. And so even if the effectiveness data is enough to convince the FDA at this point, they still have to have the 2 months of safety data available before it can be considered for the EUA or the Emergency Use Authorization.
We continue our conversation about the latest news in the race to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. This weekend, Pfizer announced its vaccine was seeing very positive results. Dr. William Hartman stays with us, assistant professor of anesthesiology at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also working on the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial and has been working on other treatments related to COVID-19. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about what goes into creating and testing and producing and distributing vaccines for a disease like COVID-19? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Hartman, the question from our caller raises also the question of how long a vaccine will be effective. Those are obviously questions we can't answer yet, but as you see it, is it likely that we're going to have a vaccine that we get once and we're done, or maybe two doses and we're done, or something we have to re-up on every year, 5 years? What determines that?
So these are questions that will be answered over this 2 year period that we follow the participants and follow their antibody levels to figure out what their level of antibodies are and how does it decrease over time. My assumption at this point, based on the fact that the virus can mutate at a reasonable rate, that we would probably need to have some sort of booster every year, similar to the flu shot.
Interesting. How does it, from what we know about the mutation rate of the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19, again, it's pretty new in the scope of our understanding, but how does it compare to, say, an influenza virus when it comes to its speed of mutation over time?
Well, it's something that we'll have to continue to follow, but definitely, you know, these viruses, they're designed to attack a host and get into their cells. And if you figure out ways to defeat it so it doesn't get in the cells, the virus is a very primitive organism, and it figures out very quickly what it needs to do to overcome that resistance. And so, you know, that's how influenza virus changes every year. That's how many of these other viruses can change from year to year. And so it's something we have to keep an eye on. We have to continually monitor. But my guess is, you know, the coronaviruses, they will always have these spike proteins. And so as long as we're able to identify that spike, we should be always able to generate an antibody response to it.
Let's bring on another caller now. Preston is with us in Stoughton. Preston, hello.
Hi there.
What do you want to ask about, Preston?
I was just curious about who would be first in line to receive the vaccines. I guess just the main concern behind my question is, since I have a wife who's a nurse, would it be healthcare professionals that receive the vaccine first?
Interesting. So Preston, thanks for the call. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And that's an excellent question. And something that there's been several committees put together to help investigate. And healthcare workers are definitely first in line to receive the vaccine, followed very closely, most likely by the elderly population and other people considered most susceptible to the virus. So the young, healthy people are obviously going to be last in line, at least initially, as the rollout goes. But your wife being a nurse, clearly she's in a high-risk position. We have to take care of our healthcare workers. We will prioritize to make sure that they're the ones who are first inoculated with the vaccine.
Thanks a lot for that call. Great question. Dr. Hartman, I think a lot of us have been talking about hopefully a vaccine will be available. Should we have been speaking in the plural? Is it likely that we'll end up with multiple vaccines out there on the market and in the world?
I really believe that there will be multiple vaccines. And there's a certain thought that that's not such a bad thing either. If you're with these different vectors, you know, different antibody responses can happen to the adenovirus that our vaccine here is working with. So maybe one injection with the AstraZeneca followed by a second injection with the Pfizer will produce a more robust response. We don't know the answer to that. Also, some are going to be more stable in one environment than in another environment. And one of the things that we're really trying to highlight in our study here at Madison is that we find a vaccine that's effective for all populations. So the Black and brown population, Asian population, Caucasian population. And it's possible that one vaccine would be better for one group and not as quite as effective in the other group. And we have to make sure that we find vaccines and find answers for every group out there, because this is a virus that doesn't care how rich you are, how poor you are, or what color you are. It's going to attack everyone. And so we have to figure out a way to effectively eradicate it in all populations.
And just our last minute, we focused on vaccines this conversation. What do you have your eye on briefly when it comes to therapeutics, things to treat people who have already caught the virus?
So I think one of the most exciting therapeutics right now are these monoclonal antibodies. The one that President Trump received, Regeneron, and the one that received an emergency use authorization by the FDA yesterday by Eli Lilly, both have very excellent effectiveness profiles, especially when used early in disease. So before people need to go to a hospital, if we can treat them with these monoclonal antibodies, they've shown to effectively neutralize the virus. And so I think that these are very exciting developments, and they show tremendous promise in terms of being able to get after that virus early and keep people out of the hospital and then obviously out of ICUs and off of ventilators.
Dr. Hartman, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. William Hartman is an assistant professor of anesthesiology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's principal investigator for the COVID-19 vaccine that's being developed by AstraZeneca in clinical trials. He joined us today to talk about Pfizer's announcement that its COVID-19 vaccine is 90% effective at preventing the novel coronavirus from causing disease symptoms.